Welcome to Lickin' On Leadership.
The purpose of this program is to bring to you interviews with industry leaders.
Folks, I'm honored to have a real special guest joining me on the Lickin' On Leadership podcast. It is Beth Milstein. Beth is one of the industry leaders and has been for some time, especially at Fannie Mae. She's done leadership throughout her career, but I really saw her leadership skills showcased at Fannie Mae. But just as we were getting ready, I was a little going over her bio and found out that Beth and I have something in common. She went to Wellesley College. I went to Pacific Lutheran University, but we're both music majors, music and philosophy. So Beth, welcome as a fellow musician to the microphone. So good to have you here.
Thank you so much, David.
So Beth, you have a music background. How did you get into the mortgage industry, having started out with a music education, a philosophy education?
Yeah, it's a great question. And like most people in the early 80s, which is when I got into the business, I did not intentionally seek out mortgage banking, but rather fell into it. And of course, then fell in love with it. But my initial connection was through an alumni connection. So for all of you out there who are maybe starting to think about careers and college, college is great. College is not necessarily, you don't need a college degree to go into mortgage banking, but college gives you lots of opportunities, one of them being alumni connections. And when I moved to Washington, D.C., because that's the city where I wanted to live, and I started looking for work, I reached out to my local network, and lo and behold, somebody was willing to take a chance, and they hired me as a temp for a bit of a startup mortgage banking company in D.C., and that's how I started.
So your roots were started mortgage banking in D.C., where you have served our industry so well. Has all of your mortgage banking career been in the D.C. area primarily?
Primarily. I would say it's mid-Atlantic. So I've worked in Washington, D.C., in the state of Maryland, also in the state of Pennsylvania, you know, through some acquisitions, but mostly mid-Atlantic, but mostly has been D.C. or Maryland-based companies.
Well, there's some great companies listed here in your LinkedIn profile. Folks, we'll put a link to Beth's LinkedIn profile in our show notes. But I mean, starting off with First Boston Mortgage, an excellent company. I remember, who was the president of that company way back when?
So the president of the company was a guy named Jim Adams. And there was a guy named Tom Fleming, who was CFO, and he also worked for the New York office of First Boston. It was a subsidiary, and it was an interesting little startup that, you know, led to other things. It did not survive, but it was a great place to start.
Great place. And then you were assistant vice president of Town and Country. We all know who that company is. And then we'll kind of run through a little bit. And if you could share with our listeners what you picked up along the way, that'd be wonderful.
Sure. So one of the things that has always been an interesting part of my career story is I hate looking for a job. So I will work very hard when I find a company or a position that I'm comfortable with. I'll work very hard to stay there and look for, you know, opportunities to grow my career rather than say I need to go elsewhere to grow a career. And part of that led to me getting fairly attached to a couple of leaders who I had a lot of respect for. And as they moved from company to company, I actually went back and forth. My first four jobs, I worked for two different leaders, and I would work for one, and then I went to work for the other one. And then I went back to work for the first one because he went to a new position. And then I went back to work for the same guy I'd worked for before when he went to a new position. And that was great because it was somebody that I knew, somebody who I trusted, they trusted me. And with each of those career steps, I was able to take on some additional responsibility and learn some new skills, but all within a very safe environment.
I think it's so interesting. We're going to talk about your views on leadership a little bit later. So it'll be really interesting. It's interesting that you stayed with two people because I think people work for people. They don't work for companies. Your story tells it so well. But tell us, how did you end up at Fannie Mae?
That's a great story. So I was working for a mortgage company and I was a fairly sizable Fannie Mae customer at the time. And they wanted to come out and meet with the team. They wanted to come film a lender in person for training purposes. So part of what this was the training group, and it was my account executive at Fannie Mae. identified us as a good target. And the training department, you know, came out to meet with us and film us so that they could basically show Fannie Mae employees sort of a day in the life of a lender so they can understand the business. My boss at the time was absolutely terrified of being videoed or having to speak all day with a film crew. And literally about 2 days before they were going to show up, he said, "We have this team coming in from Fannie Mae, and I just need you to spend the day with them, and they're going to talk with you, and they're maybe going to do some video." He really did not prepare me well at all. I was like, okay, I had no idea what was going on. And they came in, and it was a great, great experience. And I'll never forget, somewhere in the halls of Fannie Mae, you know, this videotape is still lying around. Clearly, I was not prepared because I wore this white shirt with red polka dots on it. I look like a jockey on a horse, right? And so every time they showed this video, and they did use it at Fannie Mae, yeah. I was like, oh my God, somebody should have told me to change my shirt because that was the worst part of the tape. The rest of it was all good.
No, that's good.
But anyway, after that experience, the team walked away, and it was the training director was there with his team sort of running the project. And when he went back, he had a position that was open, and he was impressed with me, and he wanted to potentially hire me. But that was a big no-no. You know, you don't poach.
Right. Don't poach from your companies you're buying loans from. Yep.
And they reached out to me and basically said, "We have a position open if you're available, if you're interested." And so I applied, and that's how I got to Fannie Mae. And I started in the training department at Fannie Mae, teaching Fannie Mae employees about the mortgage business.
So you started teaching the Fannie Mae staff how a mortgage banker functioned.
Right. And surprisingly enough, how Fannie Mae actually did the business that they did and how Fannie Mae made money. Because people working inside of Fannie Mae were fairly siloed back then, and they didn't understand how loans got in the door.
It's very common for people to get siloed in a particular department and really not understand the big picture. So you started off, that explains a lot, because that's where I met you. And I loved your passion to help lenders. And that was so clear, literally from the get-go. There's a warmth that comes across with you, Beth, that is just draws people in. It takes down defenses, draws people in. But there's professionalism along with a warmth. That's, I wish anyone wanting a career could just spend some time with Beth to learn how to do both professionalism and warmth and sincerity and draw that out. You, that is something I think that transference, would love to get a copy of that old video, by the way, that'd be so much fun. But that'd be one of the things that I think anyone wanting to have someone as an example, I would encourage you to pay attention to Beth and get to know her if you ever have a chance to sit down with her, because that's one of the things that I have enjoyed and admired about you so much. One of the things you did at Fannie Mae that was so good was you really helped lenders get approved to Fannie Mae. Talk a little bit about that and the leadership that you brought there.
Sure. And thank you for that. That was a really fun time. That was near the end of my career at Fannie Mae. But what was really exciting was that, you know, we took a chance in building out a new team because we wanted to change the experience of lenders coming in the door at Fannie Mae. And we got some feedback before we started this process that it was challenging, it was difficult, people didn't know what to do, they got lost along the way. We thought it shouldn't be this way. So we put a team together, and I have to say, it was probably one of the most fun jobs I ever had. And as you said, I think the passion came through, that it was so exciting to meet with lenders and talk about their business and show them how they could improve their business and what they needed to do to get approved to do business with Fannie Mae, that we and my team took a lot of real personal pride in the hundreds of lenders that we helped get approved. And it's just been great to see them flourish. It's really fun.
There's so many aspects about that story that we could really dive deep into. But one of the ones is talking about your team. I'm thinking of Christy Moss now, who's over at Form Free. What an amazing Tammy. And talking about your crew, that team, we had you on the podcast, Looking on Lending, the sister podcast of this one. And we had you on there, and we called it the Fab Four. You came on several times, and we taught people, we explained the Fannie Mae approval process and what to anticipate. And there was so much. So it was a fun thing playing off the Beatles Fab Four. We played off of the Fannie Mae Fab Four, and you guys just crushed it. You did such a good job on explaining that. But talk about that team, because it was special.
It was special. That was a great team. And what worked so well on that team is we were all really different, but we all really cared about what that customer experience was going to be like. So everybody had a really strong customer service ethos sort of just embedded in their system. And we also shared the work equally. I didn't have any prima donnas on the team. We were successful together as a team. Everybody helped everybody out. It was completely seamless. You know, we would just step in if somebody was tied up to help somebody. I think lenders got to know more than one person on the team as they worked with us, because sometimes someone wasn't available. We never wanted anybody to have to wait for a callback or a response. So we would always have a backup ready to go. We had easy access to information. And it was just, like you say, it was the Fab Four. It was a fabulous team, and I loved working with them.
When you're building teams, this is, you know, it's almost slightly out of our order here, but when we're on that fabulous team, that Fab Four team that you built, talk about what did you look for? Because they were different. They were uniquely different, yet they got along so well. How did you, first of all, identify which ones you wanted on your team? And then how did you make such four different personalities, the other three and yourself? Really, how did you identify them as the ones?
Another really great question. So two of the four actually were sort of assigned to me. There was a function that we were winding down inside the company, but two of the four were valuable employees. And this was one of the good things about working for a sizable company and a well-run company. Just because that function went away did not mean they were without a job. And so as we were standing up this new team, it was not me, actually. Somebody had the idea that they should just assign them over to me.
Okay.
So I got them, and I got the last vestiges of the work that they were winding down. So I actually had to learn how to manage a slightly, I was managing a deal process, and I had to learn how to manage a slightly different function. But eventually that work disappeared, and I had to integrate them into the team. I think I had Tammy on the team, and Christy, I can't remember how Christy got on the team, honestly. I have to ask her.
Well, when she shows up in such a big way.
She found her way to me, or I found my way to her. I can't remember. But anyway, we ended up together. And, you know, we built the process together. And that was one of the things that I think really helped solidify us as a team. We had the opportunity to design the work that we wanted to do. And so it was a true collaborative effort. So they all owned part of the process, and then they had to deliver against that process. So that's part of what I think made us work so well together, is we built it together and everybody felt like they had input.
And then how did you make the varying personalities? I mean, Tammy is more quiet, reserved, very much more, heads down, very focused, yet just such a deep sweetheart of a person inside, with then contrast her to Christy, which is so out, such an outgoing, wonderful personality. I mean, how did you bring these different personalities together to work as a team?
So one of the things that, again, a shout out to Fannie Mae, we did a lot of work identifying individual competencies and team competencies using various instruments. People are very familiar with like Myers-Briggs. We did that a long time ago. Then we used some other tools. One of the things that was really funny to us as a team is one of those instruments that we took, when you get the results, we were all in many ways the same. As different as our personalities were, there were some basic skills and areas of interest and behaviors that were consistent for all of us. We were all very quick to make decisions, you know, sort of pushing ahead, you know, had a little bit of aggressiveness around sort of how we approached work. This was a color-coded thing. Our color was red. So think about everything that the color red would sort of embody for you. And, you know, we were the red team, and every one of us was really close on that scale. So that gave us a lot to think about and talk about. And at one point we even thought about whether that was healthy, because what really makes a team good is to have a diverse set of teammates. And while we look so diverse on the outside, when you got right down to it, there was a lot about how we approached work that was so similar that we sometimes wondered if that wasn't creating a blind spot for us. but gave us something to laugh about. So we looked different, but we really were the same.
Well, it was an amazing team, and we could spend so much on. There's so many lessons to be learned about leadership and managing in a time and during expanding time. But it was actually through several seasons you managed that department. I'm looking at your from 1993 all the way through to 2019, and but you were at Fannie Mae for 26 years. That's amazing. It's a great career to have, though. What a great company with a lot of great people in it. But let's get to the broader topic of leadership. Beth, how would you define the word leadership?
So in thinking about this, you know, preparing a little bit, I came across a quote that really resonated with me that I'll share with you and for the listeners. And I just thought it was so elegant, right? A leader is someone who makes something happen that wouldn't have happened otherwise.
Mm, that's a great definition.
And
yeah.
I just love that because it speaks to action, right? A really good leader is someone that really can accomplish something significant. And also, you know, great leaders take people with them on a journey with that end goal in sight. So I really like the active phrasing in that leadership definition. And it's all about, you know, really making good things happen.
Well, you talked about earlier, you're talking about your career path, how you followed two individuals before Fannie Mae, which is probably some good examples of leaderships that inspired you, seeing as you stayed with both of them. Talk about those leaders who have inspired you, whether it be those two or others.
So I have many, so I'll try and focus on just a few. So this is really great. One of the early bosses that I had, a leader that I followed, is a guy named Joe Brancucci. And for anybody who is in the credit union segment, they will know Joe because he is a true leader and he is still working today in a credit union out in California. And Joe became a customer of mine as well as being a boss of mine in my career. So we've had a very storied, longstanding relationship. But one of the things that I learned from Joe, both when I worked from him and then watching him as a leader within the credit union industry, is he really inspired people to take significant risks and made really big bets on future goals for himself personally, for companies that he worked for, and for the industry that he worked within. And he would always think about sort of what was possible versus, you know, what was in front of you. And he really trusted people to go out there and do the work. So there was a lot that I actually took away from him that was very, very inspirational. One of the things that Joe did that also translated to another great leader that I'll mention from Fannie Mae, a guy by the name of Jeff Hayward, also quite well known in the industry, and he is just a fantastic leader, is this notion of really creating something new and taking a risk. Joe created something completely new as a solution in the credit union industry and has been very successful. And Jeff, this is back in the early 2000s, was charged with creating a whole new organizational structure at Fannie Mae to serve a segment of customers. It was the smaller lender. And watching him build out that organization, and I was actually working in human resources at the time. I was still in training in human resources. Working with him as he built out that organization, I was so inspired by what they were building that I wanted to go work there. And I, of course, missed being on the business side. So I actually went and talked to him about, you know, whether he would hire me to come work in that organization. And he was very open. He knew me, of course, over the years, but he was very open about looking at somebody who was in one role and thinking about, does that make sense? Because I have to say, when I did go to work in that organization, people within the company were like, wait, I don't get it. You worked in HR and now you're like working in single family in the business. How does that work? Right? Because people didn't realize I was a mortgage banker before I got to Fannie Mae. But Jeff understood that. And he said, I think you'd be a great fit as long as you can pass the interview process. And I then worked for somebody who worked for Jeff, and she was thrilled and she hired me. You know, it was really fun because then I was part of a team once again that was building something new. And that's really the most fun, I think, in business is to build something new.
There's no question. Yeah. If you're working in an area that is tearing down, dismantling something, that's not quite the same, but building something new, it is very exciting. You know, beyond just these leaders that have inspired you, are there others that have had a tremendous impact on your career as well as helped you develop as a leader?
I will offer two other good leadership examples, right? So there was a woman I worked for early on at Fannie Mae. Her name is Leah Rampe, and that was when I was working in the training department and then human resources, and they brought her in to run human resources. After she left Fannie Mae, I only worked for her for a couple of years, and then she left Fannie Mae, but we have stayed in touch. And what impressed me, and I actually just talked to her last week, is I've watched what she's done with her life and her career after she left Fannie Mae. And she is a very spiritual person, and she got very involved leading, you know, sort of, I wouldn't say it's necessarily religious, but it's sort of on that aspect of the world, leading missions and pilgrimages and working with interfaith groups. And she became the executive director for this very interesting institute. She moved out to West Virginia. She started a farm. And she's living in this really interesting community with other people. It's just this whole different life of service. And that's sort of something that really resonated with me, is how much she has done, you know, professionally, and then how much she has given back to her community and sort of given back to the world. She's just a really interesting person. Her husband is interesting. They're a very educated, interested couple, and they do all these really interesting things to help the environment and the community. And so that, you know, leadership outside of business, but leadership sort of following your passion and making a difference in the world, really resonated with me with her. And I actually just had a conversation with her last week where I wanted to tell her what an impact she had on me because of all of the things that she's done. So that was a fun conversation, and it is important to stay in touch with people too.
Is that possibly what inspired you to go on to be the president of the Jewish Federation of Howard County? I think that's outstanding. I mean, that's something outside the industry, and it's a way of giving into a community that's dear to you.
So I think so. Some of that, certainly, as I watched other people get involved in nonprofit work, you know, it's a community that I've always been very involved in. It's our local Jewish community, and wanting to make sure that, you know, just like from the business perspective, when I think about why do lenders need to succeed, and it's not to be in the mortgage banking business, it's to help people get into homes, right? So you're helping people create a sustainable future. And when I think about what I did with the Federation, it was all about building a sustainable future for the Jewish community in Howard County. And that's a great thing, right? So that
is great.
Really resonated with me. So that's why I did it.
I think that's outstanding. I think it's important for people to hear that, because we get locked into our careers and say, no, everything I did is there. And I think it's so important to go outside of our industry and be able to give in various ways. And I think that's outstanding. When you look at mentoring people, you have mentored so many people. I was going to ask you a question, who's mentored you and all that, and we've got some insights there, but you have mentored so many, specifically mortgage lenders along their journey. And talk about mentorship and the importance of that. And what do you think others can do to develop their mentoring skills? You're such a good example of that.
Oh, thank you. I do think mentoring is important. And I did not have a mentor. And mentor wasn't a term that was often used early when I started in my career. It became more popular, and you know, then all of a sudden everybody had a mentor and you should go get a mentor. And I remember actually asking some people to be my mentor, and they were like, what? Like, what is that? And, you know, it never went anywhere. Right. And then I sort of got 30 years into my career and I thought, gosh, nobody mentored me. Why should I have to mentor anybody? But, you know, I quickly became much more aware that, you know, it's important to help other people along the way. So regardless of what my experience was, and this is one of the leadership lessons I've learned, is look at all the things that did or did not happen to you and try and change that for somebody behind you. So for me, mentoring became much more of a, I'm just interested in helping you succeed. Doesn't matter if it helps me or not, I want to help you grow, whether you're a business leader, or an individual. I want to help you figure out what's the best path for you. And it's really gratifying, I find, just to talk to people and help them think through how they are making their next big decisions, whether it's a career change, a career move. Sometimes people are just questioning whether or not they can really do their own job. And generally, people can do their job. They end up being their own worst enemy. And to have somebody to just be a sounding board and be a resource and create a safe place to talk about things, sometimes you just need to talk it through. And, you know, if it's work, you can't really always talk to your boss and you don't want to talk to a colleague. Sometimes you need to talk to somebody that's outside sort of your direct sphere of influence. And also having that slightly different perspective can be helpful. So all of those things sort of go into, you know, when I think about mentoring, and I think mentoring can be different for everybody. It's what works between the two people who are in that relationship.
Well, it was really fun just to watch you in action on this point. And it happened so many times at the conferences. Fannie Mae always would have that wonderful suite where you would have the meeting suite. And we'd all set in, have meetings, and we'd wait our turns to talk to the various Fannie Mae representatives. I always had the privilege and sought for the privilege to sit down with you. I loved getting there early, Beth, because I'd watch you talking and mentoring lenders, though, whether they were some of them who were approved, some were seeking approval, but you just showed such an interest in them and you spoke to them in a way that they just were made to feel special. I think that's such an important part of this, of the mentoring process, is just pouring into them and doing it in a genuine way. And you did that so wonderfully at Fannie Mae. Let's talk about a few characteristics or traits that you believe every leader must possess, especially in today's world, which seems to be so polarized.
Yeah, it's a challenge these days. So confidence is probably the first thing that comes to mind. You know, a good leader has to be confident, because you're often taking a risk and you're asking people to take a risk with you. And if you don't exhibit confidence in the path that you've charted, nobody's going to want to come along for the journey. So That's really important. And then with that, you have to have some humility. So, you know, the worst leaders that I ever worked for, the worst leaders that I saw, were the ones that were dictatorial and political and all about sort of self-aggrandizing what they did versus what the team could do together or how they could inspire others. So I do think a good dose of humility is really critical. And then there's an element of fearlessness that needs to be there. You have to be willing to take some risk. You have to be able to influence and persuade, because often, and this goes along with another skill, which is to have a real vision and to be inspirational. If you are going to inspire people to do something differently, then you have to be able to influence and persuade them that it's worth their effort to make the investment to do things differently. And then communication. You know, if you cannot communicate your vision, if you cannot, and it's both ways, it's listening and talking. Listening probably more important than talking. I love the saying that, you know, we were created with two ears and one mouth, and there's a reason for that. And last but not least, and this is a personal value for me, is I think you always have to be intellectually curious. If you are not asking why, if you are not researching things, if you are not reading about different industries, I don't know how you learn. You become too insulated. So there's a short list of things that, you know, when I think about leadership traits, those are the ones that I tend to go to.
I love every one of those. And we could just expound and make a whole podcast out of each one of those particular areas. But humility is one of the ones that's hardest to find, and is the one that I think is probably the most, from my perspective, from what I've seen, is the hardest one to find. I agree with all you. If you were to go through the six list of six: confident, humility, fearless, persuasive, ability to communicate, and intellectually curious, going through that list, which one would you say the one that we struggle most to find today?
So probably hard to find true visionaries. And then I do think humility is hard to find, because I think there's a lot of false humility, right?
Yep. So yeah, that's a good point.
People have to be true to themselves, be genuine, And humility, you know, I have found that humility comes with age. When you're young, you think you know everything. You think you're, you know, indomitable. Nothing is going to hurt you. You don't ever think of a bad outcome. You live a few decades and you see that things don't always work out the way that you anticipate. It gives you a little bit of humility.
Yeah.
The other thing is, if you as a leader assume responsibility for everything yourself and you think that you have to do all the work, and if things work out, you look great, and if things fail, you look awful, and you put all that pressure on yourself, you're not letting others come along and do the work with you. You're right. Probably, you know, being a bit overbearing. And to have the humility to say, I don't have all the answers, and I don't know the best way to do everything. And maybe there's a resource on my team that can do something differently than I would do it, but it's going to get us a better result. Let me give that person a chance. All of that sort of feeds into to that humility. But part of it is, you can't be too proud and think that everything just sits on yourself. Life doesn't work that way.
Well, it was so, you know, the Fannie Mae Fab Four, the group that you led, was such a good example of how you deferred out to each other and how they all participated in such a big way. I love that. Beth, what would you say are some of the biggest challenges facing leaders today?
So I would say, you know, pre-COVID, post-COVID, maybe there's some differences and some similarities. Pre-COVID, for sure, growing workforce diversity. Mm. Post-COVID, workforce diversity and the way people work. I think businesses are going to have to reimagine how they work and how they interact with their employees. And so thinking about what motivates especially younger people to work, it's very different than, you know, when you and I came up through the industry. And I don't know about you, but I remember my parents were always like, go get a good government job, or go get a job where there's tenure and you have a pension. And they were all about stability and working somewhere for 30 years, right? And then retiring with the gold pocket watch. You know, my kids are millennials. They don't view their career that way at all.
Well, that's right.
So thinking about the complexity and the diversity of the workforce, just as demographics change, and the outlook that people who are in their 20s and 30s have today about what their future looks like, it's very different than people that are in their 40s, 50s, and 60s. And thinking about how to engage them and keep them engaged is going to be different. They're not going to just show up and go to work for 10 years every day and not speak up. It's just not how it is.
That is so true. And I think when you look at the millennials that are coming into the workplace, the Gen Zers, which my kids are at, they have just such a different construct of what an ideal career is. And it requires a lot of flexibility. They want in social causes that the company stands for is
right.
Important to them. They enjoy life and they don't get so locked down that they are selling their soul to the company store, so to speak. It's how the old song lyrics go. They want to find people that have a cause and that line with theirs. Talk a little bit about some of the millennials that you have worked with or the Gen Zers. Maybe we should say, talk about some of the next generation individuals that you see coming into our industry. What are the things that you've observed that you would say lenders or leaders consider these things?
So one of the things that I think is a great benefit today that did not exist when I started in the industry is there's actually education now. Like people could choose to be a mortgage banker. Back in the day, I don't know that anybody chose to be a mortgage banker, but if that's a career that you aspire to, you can actually go get training and education. There are programs, there's internships. There are so many wonderful opportunities through the MBA, through regular, even college courses now, I think they're starting to teach in some places mortgage finance. So there's just lots more opportunities to actually learn the business. And of course, I would say it's more complex than it was 30 years ago. You know, I started in this business, I counted, David, it's scary, 38 years. 38 years ago, I got into the business, right? And you know, things are much more complicated now, but there's a lot more support. So you can actually chart a career path as a mortgage professional today in a way that you couldn't have in the 70s and the 80s. I was excited to hire somebody who just recently graduated college and brought him on as a business analyst, and he was sharp as a tack, did not know the mortgage business, but really, really sharp. And so I taught him a little bit. He loved working on my team. He moved around a couple of different places. But within 10 years, he left Fannie Mae to go work for GE. And he went and got his master's degree. And that's exactly the profile that I think we see today, is somebody's going to come acquire a set of skills, look for the next step, and they don't think twice about maybe looking outside and going to a different company. They no longer say, what's my career path within the single company where I work?
Let's talk about some of the most frequent mistakes that you are seeing leaders make.
So one is, I spoke about it a little earlier, is the I versus we.
Mm-hmm.
A leader that takes credit, I've seen this a lot. People take credit for work that their team does. Nothing is more demoralizing to a team than to think they're working together and the leader gets all the credit and the team just gets a attaboy. So that's huge mistake. I also think being overtly political. I've seen leaders who manage up really well, but do not take care of their teams. And, you know, they're not fooling anybody. So that's also a big mistake. And the last thing I would say is leaders who are afraid to ask for help. This sort of gets back to the I versus the we. You know, no one person has all the answers. Don't be afraid to ask for help or evolve other people. That's a sure way to failure if you sit and spin around by yourself trying to figure something out, but you're too proud to go ask somebody else for help, especially if it's somebody who's more junior or in another area. Go where the resource is. Go where the skill and knowledge is. Who cares if they are above you, below you, lateral? Go get what you need to help your team succeed.
When you're looking at leaders, we've watched one too many of them get derailed. What are some of the behaviors or traits that you've seen derail leaders?
Leaders who are more focused on themselves or the outcome mm-hmm. than how they're getting there, right? With every business opportunity, there's a what you're doing, and then there's the how you're doing it. So if you are successful at achieving business goals, but you leave dead bodies in your path, that is not a good leader, right? And over time, that will derail people because nobody will want to work with that person. So for me, that's the biggest derailing, is you just trample on the people, you know, sort of on your way up.
That's so true. Great. As we wrap this up, I want to look for some advice that you would give those seeking to get into a leadership position. What are some things that you would recommend they do?
Educate yourself. If where you are working is not providing tools or education around leadership style, leadership traits, go find them. There's tons of stuff out there on the internet, books, lots of really good examples. So that's one thing. The second thing I would say is volunteer to lead projects. Leadership is a learned trait. Nobody is born, well, there probably are a few people that you'd say they're born, they're natural leaders, but you are developing skills over time and you need to have experience. Start small, lead a project. See if you can, you know, convince people to come work with you, put together a cross-functional team and try something different. Volunteer for things, take risks. If you don't do some of these things, and by the way, if you don't have some failures along the way, you never really learn. And it's painful. I've had a couple of really big failures in my career, but they are the best lessons. Everybody says that. I think people know it intellectually. But nobody wants to fail. If you don't fail, you're not pushing enough.
Yes, I think that's one of the questions. That is one of the questions I ask in every interview when I'm looking to bring on someone into the consulting. Tell me, I'm glad to hear about where you succeeded. Tell me where you failed. And you get this big pause. Do I dare be authentic in this moment? And I think that's one of the most important areas, is to talk about the failures, and not so much that you failed and you're, you know, get into a spiral down about it. You talk about what you failed at and what you learned from it. What are some of the resources that you would recommend someone look at to gain insights into becoming a better leader, Beth?
Gosh, there's so many really good books on leadership. you know, Stephen Covey is a like an oldie but a goodie. You know, some of those things are really good. Harvard Business Review, I have to say, they have published so many excellent articles, and they have spawned so many, you know, really great leaders and mentors and writers that there's so much to research there. Those are two really good sources. I mean, you could just Google leadership and see what comes up.
Right.
TED Talks, you know, I think, what's it, Simon Sinek?
Simon Sinek, yeah.
Yeah, he's a really great speaker. Brené Brown, you know, has some really interesting things. So those are some easy places to go and look.
That's really good. Beth, what are you doing these days? You're now entering the consulting, so you're far from retiring. I'm so glad to hear that. Tell us a little bit about what you're doing now and how people can get a hold of you.
So I have set up a little consulting shingle, Milstein Consulting. So you can find me on LinkedIn. It's probably the easiest way to get to me, or my email is beth@milsteinconsulting.com. It's pretty easy. I've been working with lenders, helping them get approved with Fannie Mae. I've helped vendors develop marketing strategies, business strategies. I've worked with trade organizations to help them grow membership, all in service of the smaller lender and independent mortgage bankers. I've worked with a variety of companies and done different projects, and they really vary. It's all about working with good companies who have a vision of something that they want to accomplish and places where I feel like I can add some value to them. So a lot of it is, and it goes back to sort of some of the things that you said you saw when you observed me at Fannie Mae, it's sitting down with leaders and helping them think through some business strategies and where do they want to go. And sometimes, and I'll be the first one to say, I've told lenders along the way who were mortgage brokers who wanted to make that change from broker to banker, I would always start with, tell me why. And if they didn't have a good rationale other than, well, everybody should be a Fannie Mae lender.
Or make more money.
not so much, you know, maybe not. If you are making money and you are comfortable with your risk profile and you like your business, you should keep doing that. And the same goes with leadership. I wanted to say this earlier. Not everybody should be a leader. And part of this, you know, where do you go to get information about how to be a good leader? Part of it is a level of self-awareness. Is that something you really want to do? Because if you don't really want to be a leader, because it is not easy, don't be. Be a good follower. Be a good team leader. Be a good team participant. But just because leadership, you know, is like, oh, the holy grail, you know, if everybody's in charge, nobody's doing the work. So that's another thing to keep in mind. But back to consulting. Yeah, so I'm spending my time doing some consulting. I've worked for over 40 years, and now I want to have a little fun time in my life as well. So you need that background.
You need that background. You've got a great marriage. I love your husband. I've met him on a few occasions. It's so much fun to see all the different things you've branched out and doing. I want to say thank you, Beth, for all that you've done for our industry and taking a few minutes just to share some of your background with our listeners. And we definitely would have to continue to expand on this. In fact, I just had this idea while we're recording this. We need to get the Fab Four back and look back to those days, and we still can give forward what you've learned over the years. And so I think it'd be fun to get a group of us together, even reassemble the Fab Four.
I talk to all of them, so we are still pretty tight.
Well, that's awesome. Thank you, Beth, so much for being here.
Great. Thank you, David.
Thanks for listening to Lickin' on Leadership, a podcast about leaders in the mortgage industry. Tune in next week, and thanks for listening.